Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to this special edition, the 357th edition of the 40 Seats Fire American Soccer Show, as we talk about the Jonathan Gonzalez situation that is the biggest talking point outside of the U.S. soccer presidency elections, candidacy that's going on with all those people. You know, everyone, my personal opinion and my personal beliefs are always, it doesn't matter where you find the talent as long as you find it. I don't care if it comes from the wealthiest neighborhoods or from the inner cities, or you somehow go around the corner and you find a pickup game right there. As long as you find the talent and you make the national team better, whether through the youth systems as well as the senior teams, well, you know what? That means we will have found the best players playing in our country. Joining us to talk about this situation, of course, we have Carter Kirshner from World Soccer Talk, Andrea Canales, one of the best soccer writers that I know, that reading content on the sport in the United States as well as Mexico, and my good friend Darius Shirzadi, the founder of Project Goal in Providence, Rhode Island. Before we begin, I just recently listened to the Max and Herc podcast, of course, Max Bredos and Hercules Gomez, and I found this information disturbing, guys. I mean, basically, Jonathan Gonzalez's father has never been contacted by anyone from U.S. soccer about, you know, making sure his son does play for the United States. Thomas Rongen, of course, is the scout for U.S. soccer. I mean, basically, he had to change up whatever the questions he was asked by Hercules Gomez. He said he never went to Jonathan Gonzalez's house. He did try to contact Jonathan with Monterrey, the club he plays for in Liga MX. He went there three times, but he spoke to club officials and not to Jonathan directly, which is tough to read. I like Thomas a lot. Richie Williams, who I respected back in the day when he was a player for both DC United and Metro Stars and assistant coaching with the Red Bulls, and sadly did not stay as the coach of the Red Bulls after Juan Carlos Osorio left that job a long time ago. He did call the house to try and get Jonathan Gonzalez to join the U-17 residency. And if, but what would happen, of course, he had Jonathan had contacts with a bunch of clubs in Liga MX, with the FMF, and basically gave the family a take-it-or-leave-it situation. It's either go there or go to Florida. And just a lot of disheartening moments to hear from this latest episode of the Max and Herc podcast through ESPN FC. First things first, I want to go to, of course, my good friend Darius Shirzadi. Darius, real quickly, just to give information for both Andrea and Kartik, please talk about Project Goal. It's a great organization you've done for many, many years, lots of grants from FIFA. Just explain Project Goal for me real quick, please.
Yeah, Danny, it was good to be on the show again. Yeah, Project Goal is in its 14th year. We focus on taking kids from the inner city here in the New England area, focusing on academics, mostly after school, but using soccer as like the carrot to get them motivated, keep them focused. We've had success helping to get kids pushed on to higher education through the universities and colleges, also local private schools as well. As you mentioned, we've been supported by the FIFA Football for Hope program because we're using soccer for social good, not necessarily developing the next professional soccer player, but we have had many of our alum participate with the academy programs, local premier clubs, and also go on to Division I, Division II, and Division III colleges to play soccer. So You know, we're continuing the fight, trying to keep kids out of trouble off the streets, but using soccer as the way to do it.
But let me ask you this, though, Darius. Have you ever had a member of U.S. Soccer, whether it's through, you know, the youth residency programs or, you know, members of the board themselves to come over to oversee what you've done in Providence, as well as the New England area, to get all these kids to play for Project Goal? Have you ever been visited by anyone from U.S. Soccer to say, hey, listen, we like what some of your kids are doing, whether it's for the men's or for the women's, you know, for the youth programs? Have you ever been approached by them at all?
No, over the years, I have tried to speak with different members of U.S. Soccer about accessing many of the inner city programs that use soccer for social good, because we just come into contact with so many different kids. And, you know, they're of all levels. And these organizations are spread out throughout the country. So they have a unique view into those communities. They have contact in those communities. You know, the communities are familiar with the programs, and in a lot of ways, you know, U.S. soccer, premier clubs, they won't necessarily go into those neighborhoods. So it would seem to me that would make sense for them to access those organizations that are already there. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And I've certainly never had anybody from U.S. soccer call me up to say we would like to come visit the program and check out what you're doing and discuss more of how we can, you know, work together or figure out some way to get the kids from your program looked at by Revs Academy or different, you know, elite clubs. You know, that's never happened.
Well, you know, that's a shame, because obviously, Darius, I know the job you do with those kids, and I know, of course, you know, your father helps you out with the game. I know your father very well, of course, and your parents. And it's a real shame that, you know, your kids are not getting looked at. You know, you never know. I mean, you probably have a diamond in the rough, and maybe they've decided to just go into some sort of a different way instead of just soccer. But now let's continue on with this topic. And, Kardik, as you've heard from Darius, U.S. Soccer has never visited Project Goal, which is a shame. And, of course, with the whole Jonathan Gonzalez situation, Kardik, it's just, you know, what is U.S. soccer really looking for? What are they trying to look for? Or they've just been so blinded by, you know, the $100 million surplus that Sunil Gulati has brought in as U.S. soccer president. Maybe they've forgotten what this whole thing is all about.
Well, that's possible, right? I mean, I certainly think that's a possibility. I think also it's pretty fashionable right now to beat up on anything U.S. soccer does and what they what they're doing in terms of scouting and outreach in the wake of not qualifying for the 2017 World Cup. I think there are some real problems with scouting, and there's some real problems with outreach to the Latino and Hispanic communities. I also think, however, a lot of times these player decisions come down to more complex situations than a lot of the critics in this country want to pretend they do come down to, or they're taking the easy road out. I mean, for example, I could make an argument that Jonathan Gonzalez, now again, not knowing his personal circumstances, and I know Herc did a lot of work on this, and I've got the podcast downloaded and ready to see it up, and probably listen to her, watch Max and her later tonight. If you're a professional footballer, you have maybe a 5 or 6 year shelf life with your maximum earnings potential. And think about this. Are you in a better position to earn the big transfer move you want and the big contract move you might want to support yourself and support your family if you're an American international, after the U.S. has just missed qualifying for a World Cup, finishing behind the likes of Panama and Honduras? And this isn't the Honduras that Rueda had a few years ago with David Suazo and Wilson Palacios. And this is a different Honduras. This is Honduras' side isn't as good, nearly as good, and they finished out of the United States. So Or are you in a better position if you're a Mexican international, even going to Europe when you see the success now of Irving Lozano, among others, Mexican international. I think a lot of this comes down to, and it's so often forgotten by people who want to be ultra-nationalistic about international football. So much of this comes down to personal decisions. They are professionals. They are professional footballers. They have to look out for themselves. They have to look out for their family. And there's a 5 to 7 year shelf life of real good earnings potential. You become a U.S. international. You don't play in this World Cup. Maybe you're not given the freedom to express yourself the way you would in another national team setup. In this case, Mexico. And you're flushing earnings potential down the drain. I mean, people don't want to hear this on this show, but I think Christian Pulisic obviously took the quick route, being U.S. international, got into the national team quickly, became the centerpiece of the U.S. men's national team. He may be foregoing long-term earnings and transfer moves by not playing for Croatia and by playing for the U.S. instead, and you have to respect his decision. But my point is, this is much more complex than people want to make it out to be. It's not just about nationality and ethnicity and identity. It's about a lot more than that. These are professional footballers.
Andrea, you know, I know you're in California, and, you know, you've probably seen it a lot over there, how many players are playing in the inner cities, Los Angeles, San Jose, I mean, Oakland, everywhere, anywhere in California, maybe not just in California, but other states as well. You've probably gone to, like, Nevada or in Utah, maybe even New Mexico as well. And how many of these children that love the game, that want to play the game, you know, they're born in this country, their parents have immigrated over to the United States, and, you know, they're seeing that right now, I mean, through what Jonathan Gonzalez has gone through, you know, to me it sounds like, is there real opportunity for these kids to play for the United States Soccer Federation, I'm not saying it's the easy way out, but what I'm saying is at least the FMF is recognizing that these kids are good enough, and, you know, they want to, and they're coming from families that immigrated from Mexico into the United States, and they want them to feel that they're more important than what our federation is doing, because we are missing a huge opportunity right now for giving these kids a chance to show and strut their stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's really the thing about your friend who's doing the soccer outreach program. It's important to remember the vast majority of these kids that, you know, soccer is great for them for exactly those reasons, to keep them off the streets, to give them exercise, to give them a connection to the community, bonding with each other. I mean, that's really what soccer is about for 99% of the players across the United States. And I think that more inner city kids should have access to it. And too often because of, you know, the fields aren't available, they don't. There's going to be a few standout kids like Jonathan Gonzalez, and these kids are realizing now, I think, that they're really blessed because they have a choice and they have options. And it is really good to have options in life because sometimes a lot of people don't get those opportunities. And like Karthik said, it may be more complicated and yet more simple at the same time. You have a certain athletic shelf life, and if the country that you're eligible for is going to the World Cup and another country that you're eligible for is not, maybe that makes your choice a lot easier. And I realize what Herc said about the family not being contacted, and I think that's a shame. I don't know how much a language barrier played into it, and I really think that that is kind of on U.S. soccer going back to getting rid of Coach Hugo Perez and other Latinos throughout the organization. I mean, Richie Williams calling Jonathan Gonzalez, if Jonathan Gonzalez's parents don't speak English, I don't know Richie Williams' level of familiarity with Spanish, but I bet it's not great. And that can make a big difference. to me, it's not so important, the, you know, the big gotcha moment. Did Thomas Rongen, you know, meet Jonathan Gonzalez at a nearby Starbucks, or did he actually cross the threshold of the house? It's great to think that U.S. soccer could have done more, but ultimately, I really feel like it's on the players to have the choice. And I don't think they need to, you know, throw it on U.S. soccer. I think there needs to be some level of, hey, with Mexico, I have this amazing opportunity, and they're giving me this opportunity, and it's really, it should be an honor to play for Mexico as well. I'm sure his father feels that way and is really excited about his son being able to do this, and I think that should be celebrated in a strange way, even by U.S. soccer. The fact that they have that kind of talent that is attracting interest from Mexico. It used to be like, oh, Mexico would never want a Mexican-American that's been developed through U.S. soccer. And now the fact that, you know, the countries are fighting over certain players, even if the U.S. lost this round, I think is indicative of a kind of progress. Maybe I'm too much glass half full, but I really look at it as a situation of the choice should be Jonathan's to make. He made it. Everything else is just chatter. Everything else is just, you know, people pointing fingers and whatever. But if he's really doing what he wants to do, and I think he is, then more power to him.
Let me say this. Obviously, whatever choices Jonathan Gonzalez makes, it's up to him. It's his life. It's whatever he wants to do. I am not against him making those decisions. If he wants to go out and he feels that, you know, the FMF made, you know, a great pitch to him to join their program, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But what I do have a problem with, and Darius, you can probably, you know, if you've seen it yourself, like, you've never had anyone from U.S. Soccer come over, I want to see U.S. Soccer make an honest effort to bring in a player like Jonathan Gonzalez, Darius, because, you know, I want to see our national team program, just like you do and all of us, you know, get stronger and better. It doesn't matter where they come from. I mean, you could have a kid, Darius, who is probably from, you know, we'll just say for the heck of it, Croatia. And his parents were from Croatia, but he was born here. And then you have the Croatian Football Federation contacting the family, and you have the U.S. Soccer Federation barely contacting the family or barely contacting you. Because, you know what this kid's all about. You've seen what he can do with the ball at his feet. You've seen how he can attack and defend and create. You know, that's the one thing that's been bothering me is that I'm not blaming Jonathan Gonzalez, obviously. I'm not. Congratulations to him that he chose the FMF because the truth of the matter is the FMF wanted him more than U.S. Soccer did, which is a shame. But still, though, there seems to be barely an effort or, you know, tactics that I think are flawed and wrong.
Yeah, I think there was something that Kardec said at the beginning that, you know, it's kind of fashionable right now to bash everything that's U.S. soccer because of what happened with the World Cup failure. I mean, let's face it that it's a huge country, but there are the avenues for kids to get involved, you know, but the key is that they need to be, you know, let's say a kid from the inner city who, like you said, parents just came over here. And this happens a lot that, you know, the parents and the kids themselves don't know how to get involved with soccer at any level. So they need to be plugged into that system and then explain to them that, you know, okay, you have a kid that has some talent. You know, he gets involved with his local town soccer if there is some. And then if there's, you know, some talent there that can be developed, you know, to get into a more competitive program. And then ultimately, you know, the Olympic development program still exists nationally, you know, maybe you can get plugged in there into an academy, you know, where they're doing training and somebody can actually, you know, see a kid like that. Now, you know, the country is very big and, you know, those programs may be further away for some people than others. They may not be present in the communities at all. But that's the real key is to get those kids who are kind of on the fringe plugged into those existing, you know, entities. And we try to do that with our kids in Project Goal where, you know, they're in the inner city. And right now in the city that we operate, there is no soccer program. It kind of went away, you know, as a lot of these town programs are, it's all volunteers. So, you know, right now there's not really that group of parents or people that, you know, are organized enough or have the time to be able to run a soccer league. So they've got to go over to the next town over, where they've got to be involved with the YMCA, or they've got to be involved with the Boys and Girls Club that has a soccer program or a Project Goal. And then it's really kind of trying to help kids like that get involved or get plugged into existing soccer programs, so that eventually they could somehow at some point get identified.
Let me also remind that this is something that's gone on with the female side for a long time. They even had the Flores twins, Sabrina and Monica, one playing for Mexico, one playing for the U.S. There's always been a sizable percentage of Mexico's female national team that are American. That, you know, I, to the best of my knowledge, I've never seen the hue and cry over losing out on Jonathan. That you know, that these women have gone to play for Mexico, and I think part of that is the assumption that the U.S. Fans have. Oh, of course, the females who stayed in the U.S. system were better. And I want to just, you know, point out that sometimes it's a thing of style. You know, people talk about recognizable, identifiable Latino style, and that's not necessarily the way the U.S. plays, either the men's or the women's national team. So sometimes a style of a player isn't appreciated by a certain team, and they look for opportunities where that style is appreciated and they feel that they can grow. But I do want to point out that on the women's side, Mexican-American players have been going to play for Mexico for a long time, and there hasn't been any fuss over it.
And probably there should be some talk
that's a great point, because a sizable percentage of the Colombian women's national team the last few cycles has either been Colombian-American or has some ties to family in the United States. And like Andrea's saying about Mexico, there's been no hue and cry about it. And Colombia actually gave the U.S. a good game in the last Women's World Cup, if you remember. Quite ironic. But this is happening. This is pretty widespread, actually, now that we're having the conversation that I hadn't thought about.
Well, you know, like I was saying, you know, look, if any player is able to fit their style, and if it's not with the U.S., and if it is with another country, whether it's, you know, where their parents were born there, it's fine. I don't have a problem with it. I just have a problem with, you know, has there been a real movement from within the Federation's, you know, headquarters in Chicago to try and, you know, get some of these players, whether they are, you know, Mexican-American or German-American or Colombian-American, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I just want them to make an effort, guys. I just want them to make an effort to try and get these players to, you know, be a part of the national team. And if they're not and they're able to work with other national teams within the globe, then that's fine. I want them to succeed. I mean, that's the most important thing out of everything here. We want these players to succeed, whether they're male or female, to fit with whatever their style is for whatever system works for them. But what really bothers me is that I don't see right now, and even if this whole thing that happened with not qualifying for the World Cup, let's say the U.S. did qualify for the World Cup, and then we find out about, well, we're having issues about this sort of situation right now. In my opinion, this situation needs to be addressed. So whether if we do qualify for a World Cup or we don't qualify for a World Cup, that it has to be addressed and it has to be taken care of right now. That's all I'm saying, because, you know, we got great players, we're developing great players, but if our national, if our federation is not going to give them an opportunity, a real opportunity, then someone else will take them. And that's good on them, on the player, because now they've strengthened that federation or that football association, whether it's in Europe, South America, south of the border, Central America, even in Asia, wherever they're going to go, wherever they're eligible to go. That's fine. but I'm just not happy with what is going on if we did qualify or did not qualify for World Cup, Kardik.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's pretty bad right now how poorly we scout, and not only that, how little imagination there is in identifying and promoting players. And look, I mean, it's again, as I said at the outset, I think it's become convenient to bash U.S. soccer for everything. I do know for a fact that there are USL clubs that scout the Alianza. And I do know for a fact there are USL clubs, and probably some MLS clubs that I'm not in touch with, that have made an effort to find players a little deeper than maybe the U.S. men's national team and women's national team scouting networks go. And I think on the women's side, it's particularly worrying because there are lots of worrying signs in general on the women's side that we've been the world leaders in women's soccer, women's football, whatever you want to call it, that there are multiple reasons why we are going to fall into some degree of mediocrity tier two if we don't correct some of these things. So that's something that I'm sort of disappointed we haven't been hearing more about during the U.S. presidential election, the U.S. soccer presidential election. But I do think there might be a need for the Federation to begin to pool its scouting resources with MLS and USL clubs. Because, as I said, I know for a fact that there are USL clubs that have scouted this way. Part of it is because they're on very tight budgets, and they're looking for bargains. And they're looking for bargains of players that are in the domestic, that either have green cards or are U.S. citizens. And you tend to get better bargains if you scout hard in the Latino community and in the underprivileged areas than you do if you're going to IMG Academy trying to sign some kid who went through the DA system and may have other options or may, quite frankly, think that they're better than they are. So I think overall, Daniel, one of the things that needs to happen is there's got to be greater coordination between the scouts for U.S. soccer, scouts for MLS clubs, scouts for USL clubs. If NASL survives, it's the same with NASL, this current situation. I don't think there's a level of coordination there needs to be, but I do know. I mean, for example, I'll tell you, there's an MLS scout I know well who has he scouts for a club out on the West Coast, who has a database several pages long of players who are eligible for U.S. passports or eligible or have some ability to be a domestic player in MLS who are playing abroad currently. And, you know, that sort of thing that maybe that MLS club needs to be contacted by U.S. soccer, and they'll have to say to the general manager of that MLS club, hey, can we borrow your database? We promise we won't give it to one of your rivals in Major League Soccer, but we need it for national team purposes. Maybe that's the sort of thing that has to happen, because I think there are bits and pieces of good scouting networks throughout this country, but there's no continuity or consistency, which is just typical of everything that goes on with U.S. soccer, quite frankly. And there are huge holes and huge cracks also that need to be covered up. But the situation is bad. I'm not pretending it's not, and it's disappointing, the position we're in. But I think it's not as bad as people think it is. We don't have to start from scratch here. There are people doing good work out there. They just need to be corralled and kind of marshaled into some sort of more consistent network, and that comes from the Federation, Daniel. You're right. The Federation has not light on this. There's so many things they haven't light on, which is why this presidential election is so contentious. And this is one of them. But there are MLS clubs and USL clubs that are doing a pretty good job for their resources, the resources that they have to scout, and the Federation should be utilizing those clubs as their member clubs in U.S. soccer professional leagues.
Darius, since the situation popped up about Jonathan Gonzalez, and of course, I guess with the way that our national team did not qualify for the Russia this coming summer, what has the parents asked you, or, you know, what opinion have you given, you know, the parents of these kids have asked you about, you know, what's going on? You know, are they a little nervous? I don't think they're nervous because they're more importantly worried about their children. But, you know, when it comes to what's going on with U.S. soccer currently, you know, what have they what questions have they asked you about the situation?
They don't really ask me other than, you know, what's going on with U.S. soccer because, you know, a lot of the families are from Colombia, Mexico, Guatemala, you know, in this area. And, you know, so soccer is part of the culture and, you know, being in the country for a number of years, they're used to, as many of us are over the last, you know, decade plus, that U.S. soccer is a very strong national team program. So for us to not make the national, to make the World Cup, you know, it is shocking for them as well. I mean, you know, are they worried about it? No. You know, like you said, they're more worried about what's going on with their kids today and what's going to happen to them in the future in terms of just living and being students. But personally don't think that any of these things would be coming up now if the U.S. had made the World Cup. I think the problems would still exist in terms of the big gaps between, you know, U.S. soccer and identifying, you know, kids or talent from those areas. Again, I still think it's a huge country and it's very difficult to be able to go out and identify every single individual of talent, every single kid. But definitely it's very disjointed. I mean, you definitely can see that there are a million different leagues and organizations involved with soccer at all different levels. And I've been involved with the USL. I've been involved with college. I've been involved with MLS from, you know, day one. You know, it's in order to kind of pull it all together under U.S. soccer, where they're directing everybody, you know, this is the way that we're going to do it. I don't know if that's possible with all the different entities that are out there, but the bottom line is they could do a better job. And, you know, now it's kind of coming to the forefront where Sunil has resigned and now there's a new president, and that's a big, you know, point of topic for all the candidates.
I was wondering, Andrea, you know, when you're talking to the coaches over there of these academies or these youth groups or what, you know, what goes on in California, you know, do coaches, you know, do you talk to these coaches? Do they tell you what, you know, what they think should be changing over here? And like I said before, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, the gender of the child, boy or girl, doesn't man or woman, it doesn't matter, you know. As long as they get the opportunity to play, and that's fine. That's all that matters. But still, you know, to hopefully to see the U.S. getting stronger, you know, that's the biggest issue right now. And, you know, I mean, I understand there's always going to be a question about youth development and where it's coming from. But still, though, you know, you're not going to get those questions answered unless you fix whatever issues you have internally inside your own federation.
I think that to a certain extent, or at least for females especially, the culture of soccer on the Latino side was kind of interesting because it actually gave Latino females in the United States a much bigger opportunity because the patriarchal structure back in Mexico and in other countries was such that there weren't really as many opportunities for women to play. And and the Latinas who were growing up in the United States had more opportunities to play because the program was more advanced on the woman's side. And, you know, honestly, Latino families that were in the United States were more open to that possibility because of that, because it wasn't frowned upon or considered unfeminine like it often is in other Latin countries. But that's changing everywhere, and I think the success of the women's game in Liga MX, the new women's team that they had this past season, really points to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had a lot of people in the stadium for their games. These programs came online in some cases in just a matter of months, and they're already drawing more fans than the Women's League in the U.S., which isn't across the board affiliated with MLS. It's kind of sort of a hodgepodge that they haven't really, you know, fully professionalized yet, in the sense that the women are not making enough money. The players, you know, across the entire roster to play as a career that will actually sustain them. Some of the, especially the guest players to fill out the rosters, are just getting a tiny day rate. They actually raised the NWSL minimums. So that's changing slightly. But, I mean, what the professional coaches here say is they are incentivized because they want their team to win to look for players just individually. And like Kartik was saying, a lot of the scouting is happening. It's just not tiered to go necessarily to U.S. soccer. It's for whatever mm-hmm. that scout coach is looking for in the short term. But then again, coaches are only human, and they're going to do and go where they're most familiar. And a lot of the coaches yeah. that have grown up in the Southern California area, they're familiar with some of the unlicensed or, shall we say, out of the federation programs like Alianza, and they'll go to those leagues and they'll go to those places. They'll seek them out. There's a lot of people that have sort of a, you know, a working knowledge of Spanish in order to be able to have conversation with families of players that they might recruit. But there's some that are not. There's some that are either out of town or have always worked with, you know, the clubs from, shall we say, the other side of the track, and that don't have that connection, aren't willing to cross that divide and to do that outreach. And, I mean, today, actually, one of the players in Germany just, you know, committed to the U.S. And you could say that the U.S. Federation maybe has had more success in getting some German-Americans lately than the Mexican-Americans. But I really think that, I mean, I agree with you. There are things that we could say, that's a hypothetical that we'll never know. If the U.S. team had made the World Cup, would we still have lost Jonathan Gonzalez? I don't know if even he can answer yeah. that, because it's hard to, like, pretend to be completely objective in a situation that, you know, impacts his career and future so directly. So we'll never know. But that doesn't mean that on any level, whether or not we would have kept him, whether or not we would have lost him anyway, that it can't improve. And with that, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And I do agree with you, Andre. I really do, because, like I've said before, I want these players to get any opportunity possible. I just feel like it's not so much, well, if we lost him, you know, did we lose him? But they tried their best to say we want you to stay and we want you to be a part of this. Did they try to treat him like, you know, he's supposed to be you know, the next great player to play for the Stars and Stripes? And I give the FMF and I give the clubs and Liga MX all the credit in the world to tell Jonathan Gonzalez, you mean a lot to us. We want you to be a part of this. We want you to come. You know, Monterrey has him on a club level. Congratulations to them. They did everything the right way. They treated him with respect. Even Juan Carlos Osorio said to him, look, I'm not going to promise you're going to be on the national team, but if you work hard, you're going to play hard, you do well for your club side, and a couple of months later, maybe a couple of, maybe even shorter than that, you know, he'll give him he'll take a look at him and say, okay, I'm going to bring you over for a camp. That's all I'm saying. I just want the U.S. Soccer Federation to do the same things that the FMF and the clubs in Mexico are showing the same respect to Jonathan that U.S. soccer should have done, and they didn't. And that's why I'm upset. If they did their best and he still doesn't come to the national team and he goes to Mexico, I'm all right with that. It's fine by me, because at least they gave it a shot. I'm not concerned about, you know, should he feel more American or more Mexican. I just want him to feel that he knows that, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation gave a damn about him and tried their best to give a damn about him, you know, to bring him over because they wanted to show him that they cared about his opinions and maybe for him to become a U.S. men's national team player. But they didn't do that. And that's the part of the negligence, Andrea, as well as Kardik. And we'll go Andrea for an answer for that and Kardik and then Darius. That's all I want. I want them to at least make him understand that they tried. And they didn't try. And that's what really bothers me. Andrea first, Kardik, and then Darius.
Well, Daniel, the worst part about that is that I think that some within the Federation, if you look at the way Tab Ramos phrased it about, you know, basically saying that if they're American, then they'll want to put on the crest. It just seemed almost really pedantic in the whole, you know, if you want to play for us, then you want to play for us, almost like they don't have to do anything, you know. If you feel American, then, you know, this is a team that you'll want to play for and you won't want to go to Mexico, which is just so short-sighted about understanding mm-hmm. the way that dual citizens feel connected to both cultures. And they're going to respond to, as you say, whichever one appreciates and reaches out and respects what they have to offer as players. But I do think that that kind of, I don't know, old school or isolationist attitude is inherent in some parts of U.S. soccer, where they have that idea that you should want to play for U.S. soccer. It should be an honor, and we shouldn't have to do almost anything. The detail on Herc's podcast about Richie Williams making the residency offer and putting a time limit of 10 minutes for the family to decide, it's just very, you know, you're either with us or you're against us type of mentality.
I don't like that.
That some people, I think, do get locked into at the Federation. I actually think, you know, it's not, and this is the problem with attitudes being institutionalized. Sunil Gulati is married to a Mexican woman. She's actually more open to outreach to dual citizens and the idea that, you know, Mexican-American fans could be persuaded to cheer for the U.S. team as like their number two team or, you know, as a fellow CONCACAF team or something like that. But I ran into that attitude, you know, that I've just explained sort of seems to be from Tab Ramos and others again and again in U.S. soccer. The idea that, you know, oh, if you want to play for us, then you want to play for us, and we don't actually have to do anything to convince you. It's sad.
And that's what I don't like, but go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you, Andre.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. Go ahead, Kardik.
Yeah, I completely agree with Andrea. And I have to say, I found Tab Ramos' comments incredibly short-sighted, patronizing, and quite frankly, embarrassed. And this is the arrogance we're talking about. And again, as I said at the beginning of the show, I feel there are professional considerations in this. If I'm advising Jonathan Gonzalez, or as I said, if I were advising Christian Pulisic, I would have told him to hold out and wait for a Croatian cap. There is no understanding, it seems, or at least they don't convey it publicly, among the upper echelons of coaches in the U.S. soccer system, with the exception of Jurgen Klinsmann, who, Daniel, you know, I came on the show a lot and criticized Jurgen Klinsmann for his tactics, for his man management, that sort of thing. But as far as his ability to understand the bigger picture and communicate with dual nationals and understand the Latino footballing culture, he was so far ahead of the rest of these guys. And it's very disappointing from Tab, a young man who was born in Uruguay, moved to Kearney, played youth soccer with John Harps and Tony Miola, who were from different backgrounds and created this melting pot at the youth level and then carried that on to the U.S. men's national team to feel this way. But it was it was an embarrassing comment, but it spoke volumes about the sense of entitlement those in U.S. soccer have, which is basically, hey, if you feel American, you'll come play for us. And if you feel like you're not American, go play for someone else. And it's incredible that they would boil identity down to something that simple. When people are dual nationals, or they have three or four nationalities within their family, and those are the types of people that have been playing football in this country, playing soccer, football, for generations now. So it's just stunning, and perhaps, again, it's a bit of petulance because the U.S. didn't do their job in doing what they needed to do to make Jonathan Gonzalez feel welcome and do the outreach, as we're now learning thanks to the excellent reporting of Herc Gomez, that maybe this was just a defensive reply by Tab Ramos, which was, hey, he doesn't feel American, he doesn't play for us. But I was incredibly disappointed by him. I think it was indicative of a greater problem in U.S. soccer, greater attitude and a greater arrogance combined with contempt for those who might grapple with these decisions. And before I shut off for the time being, I will also say this permeates the U.S. men's national team fan base. There are an uncomfortable number of ultra-nationalists, I think, that get really particular about these issues and take them very personally, that support the U.S. men's national team. And I don't see those sorts of supporters at MLS games or at USL games or at NASL games. Quite frankly, there are a lot of people who have made the U.S. men's national team their club team, right? So they're not mixing with the Timbers Army and the diverse group there and kind of the eclectic hip group there or Dark Clouds in Minnesota or any of those kind of really cool supporters groups where you get a diversity of thought and ideas. You get a lot of these U.S. men's national team fans who then react and say, oh, well, this guy obviously feels Mexican. He's not really an American. Those sorts of comments, the same things they said about Giuseppe Rossi, the same things they said about Nevin Subotic. And I think that unfortunately gives a level of comfort to the people in U.S. soccer who then maybe don't share the same attitudes, but then reflective in the comments they make, like what Tab said, reflect that sort of attitude, quite frankly.
Darius, stay away from the computer so we don't get feedback, and then you can answer.
I'm nowhere near a computer.
I hear something in the background.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but
that's all right. But go ahead, Darius.
I can't comment on the Jonathan Gonzalez thing. I mean, I think it's kind of a story, after the fact because of because of the U.S. not making the World Cup, and I just think there's issues within U.S. soccer in terms of identifying talent and kids, and I don't think they can continue the way that they've been doing it. So, as Andrea and Carter said, that, is it an arrogance per se, or is it just, this is the way we've been doing it and it's been successful and now it's not. So, it definitely needs to change. And I think Andrea made a good point, too, in regards to, this is all focused on the men's team, but we almost ignore the success that the women's program has had. Now, does that mean that they're doing everything correct on the women's side as well? Is there, gaps there? Are they treated the same way? Is the scouting of talent the same? Maybe that's something to look at. You would hope that they're doing everything the same and then wondering why the women are so successful and the men have kind of dropped off. But, there's definitely has to be changes. I don't know what the right way is right now, but there's big gaps. And I think, we've talked about it here on this show. So, there's got to be a clear path forward that is going to make up for these kind of shortfalls. In the near future.
And I do agree with Andrea. I mean, obviously I would like to make it more, we want to make it more about both genders getting the same opportunities, playing, being recognized by the federation. And it's just one of those things where I would like to see both genders get the same amount of respect and the same amount of, do they want to play for the United States? If they don't, then, as long as U.S. soccer does make the effort to get them to play for U.S. soccer, if they are a dual national or a triple national, you know, give them the same respect like the men gets in some ways. If you are a dual citizen and you have an opportunity to play for, you know, either Mexico or for you or for the United States. I want that for both, obviously, because, you know, we want to keep and seeing the women doing well on the international level. But, Andre, I think we can also agree now that the women's game internationally, Andrea, has gotten better. This is not USA and Norway or USA and China anymore. Sweden is getting better. The Germans are getting better. The English are now getting better. I mean, you know, John Herdman, not to bring in the Canadian situation, of course, with Octavio Zambrano, but it sounded like the England wanted to bring John Herdman to manage the women's program once he was done with Canada until that whole thing situation happened. I'm not going to get into it, of course, but, you know, also the Canadian women are improving, and thank goodness that the women's game is improving, Andrea, because if we are not going to see improvement out of the women's game, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's nice to see the United States winning all these Women's World Cups, but still, though, thank God that the women's game is improving. And who knows how many of those players are originally born in the United States and they're playing for other countries that are improving those international programs on the women's side, Andrea.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is something that I think U.S. soccer should be proud of, in terms of they've sort of helped other countries take a little bit of a shortcut to improve, because if these are players that have played with U.S. women's national team players on the college level, on the youth team national levels, and just got to a point where they felt, like you mentioned, they weren't getting those opportunities, and now they want to avail themselves of the chance that dual nationality might offer, they're not going to be intimidated, and there is not going to be that fear factor in going up against basically their fellow Americans. And they're going to sort of lead the way for the countries that are challenging the U.S. And I also think that as the league – the women's league continues to grow, because it has been doing well. It's lasted already longer than any of the previous women's pro leagues. Then it's gonna happen more often, because players from around the world will come and will play regularly and alongside these U.S. national team players. And there's going to be that adjustment period when that intimidation factor is gone. And it's going to really have to be the skill set being better. And that's going to require a commitment from U.S. soccer to really develop a style and tactics and be top level, and not just, you know, assume, oh, well, our players are better, so we're going to win the game. That sometimes has been the sort of approach that has backfired on the U.S., because on all levels, if a program is going to maintain excellence, there has to be a commitment to really look at all the areas in which it can improve. And the criticism that the U.S. Soccer Federation is under right now might, in many ways, as long as it doesn't go overboard into the burn it down, let's destroy everything mentality, it's exactly what it needs to improve. We need to scrutinize everything, and there are a lot of failings. But then that also means, thankfully, there's also a lot of room for improvement and a lot of different ways to make the program much, much better for both the men and women.
Absolutely, and I'm agreeing with you as well. Kardec, I don't want a Band-Aid. Obviously, I agree with her. Look, I'm not asking to burn everything down. I'm not asking them to burn it down. But identify the issues. Look where it's coming from, look for the source of the issue, and then go in there and fix it. And then we can say, you know what, U.S. Soccer, you did a great job here. You understand now what's the problem. You're fixing the problem. And that's all we want. Because do I think that there are still good people at U.S. Soccer? Of course I still think there's still good people at U.S. Soccer. But the systematic failures, turning a blind eye, like what she said about what Tab Ramos said. Well, if you feel American, you'll wear the American shirt. But if you feel more Mexican, you'll wear the Mexico shirt. And that is the type of rhetoric that has to be erased from the vocabulary, because we're no longer in that position anymore. Or if it was a position, you can't think like that anymore, because what's going to happen? Are you going to lose more players if you say those things? And no, you will lose players if you say those things. The whatever is broke, Kardik, it has to be fixed, and it has to be fixed now.
Yeah, and I think just in general, I mean, just finishing up on the Ramos comments, that seems to encapsulate this whole discussion, is that if you're going to hitch yourself to ultra-nationalism and a certain styled player or a certain type of player, you're going to continue to fail, right? I mean, obviously, national teams aren't as cosmopolitan or diverse as club teams are around the world, but they're becoming more diverse. And that would be unilateral disarmament when you're not even in a strong position. I mean, Spain is taking dual nationals. They took Diego Costa. They took Marcos Senna. Let's see, they won three major tournaments in the last decade. And they still think it's good enough for them. The Netherlands has been doing it. Now Italy is even doing it. Eder, a great example, Brazilian-born, Diego Mota. So, I think Ramos's comment was just absolutely ludicrous. There was a lot of talk in this U.S. soccer election about player development, promotion and relegation, state soccer associations feeling like Soccer House doesn't have their best interests at heart. I think as I listened to the discussion and the discourse, it's elevated at some points and it's very childish at others. And there's, you know, one particular candidate out there that has a lot of supporters that are very, lively about issues and of corruption and accusing everyone of being corrupt or being shills. But I think all of the candidates have offered pieces of a vision that are important for us going forward. And I think it's important as we talk about all of these subjects, and the women's game is particularly important because, as I said earlier, I believe we're in decline in the women's game relative to the other top nations, Germany, France, Australia, England, you could even throw Japan in there, relative to that. That doesn't mean we're in a complete decline, but that means that from the starting position where we were above all of those countries, I think we're somewhere in the middle of the pack of that group of five or six nations right now, going into a World Cup year next year. You know, we have to have these conversations. So I think it's important that whoever wins this U.S. soccer election listens to some of the opposition, some of their opponents, and then we have kind of a unity government where whoever wins the presidency reaches out. Let's say Eric Winalda wins the presidency. He reaches out to Kyle Martino and Carlos Cordero and Kathy Carter and Steve Gann and has them in various roles that fit their level of expertise. And I think the same thing if Carter wins or if Cordero wins. I actually believe if Cordero does win, he might do that because he seems to be winning some favor among the athletes because he's good at listening is what I've heard thus far. But don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole about that election. I'm just thinking right. When you say we need to get things fixed and now is the time, I completely agree with you. And my philosophy towards the presidential race is, okay, one may be better than the other, maybe better than the other, but they should all work together after this is over, and they should all have a role. I really like some of the things we've heard from Steve Gantz and Mike Vinograd, who are two candidates who I haven't been talked much about. So whoever wins needs to bring those two guys, I think, into their inner circle.
Well, we'll see what happens there. Andreas now has had to step out, folks, and I want to say thanks to her as well. I think we have a caller on the line who probably wants to give an opinion. Go ahead, caller. What's your opinion?
Good afternoon, you piece of shit. Why don't you suck off our dust in my ass?
And, of course, we always have one of those idiots that likes to call. So, you know, always wants to ruin a good topic, but thankfully I cut him off. So, anyway... as we finish up here, gentlemen, and as we have one down and two to go. So, Darius, we'll go to you first. What the changes would you make to the scouting? And you're reverting again.
Was that me?
But that's you, Carl. Yep, it's you, man. I'm sorry. It's you. But real quick. There we go, much better. So, Darius, what would you do if you were running this whole situation? What changes would you make?
I just think you got to make it easier for, a larger amount of talent and kids to be identified. I think there needs to be equal standing. I think, as Tardet said, in regards to like the USL leagues in identifying talent, I think there's kind of a one-way street in terms of looking at kids that either come directly out of college, in the draft, kids who are already in the academy program, development academy, under 16, under 17, national teams, under 19, as like those are the ones that you're looking at and that you're not missing anything. I think that's not the way to look at it. I think there's we're capturing a lot of players, and I think they all need to be looked at, and there needs to be just a better system of being able to identify players from all of those levels and letting them get a chance to be seen or compete against what's considered to be the top level that we have right now in the country, and then see how they fare. We shouldn't be losing, players that are living or have been living in the U.S. and then going to play for another country. If we can't, and then we need to find out if we are, why are we losing them? I'd love to have or find out what's the conversation with Jonathan Gonzalez as to what the decision was to make that jump and why not stay with the U.S. And it could be as simple as I think someone said that, one country is going to the World Cup and the other one isn't. So, the decision was right there. So, we have to do a better job, and that would be, I think, a start.
All right. Kartik, of course, your thoughts, please, about what changes would you make for the way that they can try to keep players and keep them playing for the USA if they can?
I think Andrea made a great point, which was you have to have Spanish speakers speaking to them or somebody comfortable in Hispanic and Latino culture. I think that's key. And then I would also say identifying the players early and scouting them hard and keeping an eye on them engaging in efforts like Project Goal, engaging in efforts like Alianza. I think that there's been some degree of delusion because there's been an occasional African-American or Latino kid who comes from the inner city. Most actually who gotten into the national program have been suburban or at least kind of somewhat suburban. But there's the occasional one that comes from the inner city or from the barrio or whatever that makes it into the national team program that we're doing a better job of this. No, in fact, we're not. We're doing probably as poor a job of it as we ever have because we're not. We now have a situation where you have a lot of coaches who are comfortable with certain youth setups. You have a lot of player agents who are only looking at certain places to sign youth players, and then push them on coaches at the professional level. And I've seen this firsthand working in NASL, as I did for several years, where then the agent turns around and pushes it on a coach that might also have the same agent or be friendly with that agent. And then the actual scouting that could benefit a lower division team in the U.S. isn't done. And as I did say earlier, there are some USL teams that are doing a better job than others at this. And I'm impressed with that go out, and part of it is because they have budget constraints and they feel like, look, they have a player budget, salary budget of $300,000 to $350,000 for a team of 20 to 22 players, first team of 20 to 22 players. They better make every dollar count. So a lot of times, but in a few cases I know about, they've got it scouted real hard in Southern California and some of the Hispanic leagues there or here in Southern Florida. But again, it's not happening frequently enough. There's no coordination at a higher level. I think we have to kind of rethink this whole thing and how we also approach these kids and how we approach their families. It's just like recruiting if for a college basketball program, right? You need to have someone like Rick Pitino. Well, Rick Pitino is the bad name to use now, but you know, someone like Dean Smith used to be, or Coach Calipari now, Coach Cal, who's comfortable going into some of these neighborhoods and recruiting those kinds of kids and talking to their families. So many African American families sent their kids to North Carolina because they were comfortable with Dean Smith, and they also knew Dean Smith would take care of their child, their sons. I don't know that U.S. soccer gives that kind of feeling to parents of Latino players who have the parents that ultimately have a lot of influence over these decisions, as we're seeing might have been the case in Jonathan Gonzalez's case specifically. Again, I haven't done Max and Herc this week. I mean, it's something I listen to every week. I'm a huge fan of both Max Berrettos and Hercules Gomez, and Max Berrettos is doing a lot of soccer, so that's why I like listening to the podcast, because I love Max, and 6 days a week he's doing American football or whatever, so we miss him in the soccer scene, and I get him one day a week listening to the pod. But I'm really curious to hear this thing, because Herc tweeted about it earlier today, and it whet my curiosity, and sounds like he's really got some groundbreaking information coming out of this, and it might really fill in a lot of the
better believe
for
it.
Us.
You better believe he does, Kardec. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. And as always, Kardec, thank you for being on. Darius, thank you for coming on. And I'll talk to you guys another time. Darius, tell your parents I said hi, and hope your father's doing well.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and, you know, let me just say this, folks. Let me just say this. First things first. You want to call in and you want to ask a legitimate question, that's fine. You want to call in and be a schmuck? That's not what this show is all about. You try to make fun of my guest because he is from India? Is that what you're trying to do? You're trying to make fun of him because of his voice? You know what? That's wrong. And it goes to show you, sadly, how disgusting society is today. If you're not going to have a legitimate conversation, you're not going to have a legitimate question to ask me, don't bother calling. That was rude. This is supposed to be a real show, real topics about the game in this country. You don't want to talk about it, then don't call. But you want to be a jerk about it? You know what? Go to hell. Now, I'm sorry, but I had to do that. But I also want to commend Hercules Gomez and Max Berrettos for talking about this on their show. And they were with Sebastian Salazar. And I want to commend him as well on this topic, because, like I've said already, I don't care what type of children, you know, they are. I don't care if they're white, if they're black, Hispanic, Asian, Indian, or, you know, Asian, whatever. It doesn't matter. If U.S. soccer is not paying attention to these kids who have the ability to wear the colors of our national team, of the United States Soccer Federation, if they are not doing their jobs the right way, we are falling and failing further than what we have done back in the past. Go ahead, listen to the Max and Herc podcast. Starts off with Bob Bradley, the new head coach of Los Angeles FC, and then it goes into the whole situation about Jonathan Gonzalez, and then Sebastian Salazar is a part of that as well. This is all I care about. I want to see these kids get an opportunity for our national team. And if U.S. soccer tries their best and they still say no, then I can't fault U.S. soccer. And let me also say this. You know, I was one of those back in the day about Giuseppe Rossi, that I faulted him. I faulted him for being Azzurri than American. And then there was an ESPN article in the ESPN magazine about Giuseppe Rossi. I believe it was either for the South African World Cup in 2010 or maybe for Brazil in 2014. I think more 2010, but I could be wrong. his father was the one that got it into his head to play for Italy. Play for Italy for the national. I realized I've been looking at it the wrong way. Even though I didn't like it, I can understand why his father wanted Giuseppe Rossi to play for Italy than the United States. So, you know, I've changed my tune about that situation. Now, some of you will still feel, you know, what he did was wrong. And I'm not here to change your opinions about that. If you feel that's how you feel, if that's what you want to go by, then that's fine. That's your opinion. But I personally feel that, you know, my pointing the finger at Giuseppe Rossi has changed on that situation. Because it was more his father wanting him to play for Italy than for his father for him to play for the United States, because his parents originally came from Italy, even though Giuseppe was born here in the United States. So all I can say is that, you know, that's what it is. That's what his father wanted, and, you know, that's nothing more you can say about that. Nothing more you can say, nothing more you can do. But it also says to me that we're still a nation that's – we thought we were on the right track. And probably we might still be on the right track depending on how this young crop of players is going to do, like Sargent, like Adams, along with Pulisic and Bobby Wood. Because right now Bobby Wood's a part of this, whether you like it or not. Weston McKennie. Brooks Lennon. I really believe that this next crop of kids playing in the under-17, the under-20 World Cups, and that also includes Timothy Weah, George Weah's son, for the U.S. men's national team in the future. I truly believe those kids are the future for the national team. And hopefully they can get mixed in with our veterans. Hopefully we'll have an attitude adjustment after what they did in qualifying towards this past September and October. Because they need an attitude adjustment in the worst way. But other than that, I want to thank everyone for joining me tonight. I want to thank my guests, pardon me, Andrea Canales, Carter Krishnayer, and my good friend Darius Shirzadi, the founder of Project Goal. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thanks for joining me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Join me this coming Sunday night, USA friendly against Bosnia-Herzegovina coming Sunday. We'll line up the guests whenever we can. Have a good night. Talk to you next time, and bye-bye for now.